I'm so. All right,
do you mind doing intro?
No, I'll do it. I'm all good. I love doing my intro. Are you ready? Ready? Mm-hmm. Three, two, one. Welcome back to another episode of Shit That Goes On in Our Heads. Today we have an amazing guest. I'm so excited to talk to Barb. Welcome.
Welcome.
So glad that I'm here. Thank you.
Yeah. How are you today?
I am very well. There is not so much sunshine, but I am sunshine for myself. So that's it.
I know.
I love that.
It's fake spring right now. Like we had 2 days in the 50s and then it's going to snow on Monday. So, you know, it's okay. You know, Mother Nature needs to stop taking the gummies, man. I swear to God, she has no idea what season we're in.
Let's tell her some words. That's right.
Yeah, it's not too bad here. I mean, it's like gloomy, but temperature wise, it's pretty nice.
Same here. And I took my dog for a walk. So that was cool. Yeah.
Me too. I enjoyed being outside crunching on the leaves with the little dog. So
yep.
It was really therapeutic.
It really is.
I told you, nature is a healer. But I guess,
I know.
You know what, though, I'm going to, in your defense, I know that it has been kind of crappy down there lately. So I didn't need you to get any sicker than you were.
I know. I'm just recovering from COVID. I'm one day negative.
That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was in a quarantine, so I was slowly losing my mind. So it was good to be outside with the dog and like fresh air and just, it was wonderful.
Yep.
Just wonderful.
That's good to hear that you're doing better.
Thank you. So Barb, tell us a little bit about your passion. What is it that you do?
So I could say that I do a lot of things, but my passion is dog therapy in educational settings, especially for children and especially for younger children, but not only, and spreading awareness about what including therapy dogs in educational settings can potentially do for our children's well-being and academics. So there are a lot of things that therapy dog teams can do for children and for teachers and for parents too, because we are all in this together. And that is really my passion, and also writing about it and talking about it, just like I'm talking about this with you right now.
I love this. This is by far the coolest thing ever.
Yeah.
What are the age ranges for those that, you know, have benefited from this?
So I think that the age ranges for to be able to benefit from therapy dog interaction with therapy dogs, there is no age range, because therapy dogs go to preschools, they go to middle school, high school, they go to nursing homes. So altogether, when you look at it, there is no age limitation for that. There are other kinds of limitations. Maybe someone is severely allergic to dogs, but there are not many cases of such very severe situations, but we have to take it into consideration. But there is no limitation as far as the age, definitely.
You hear that, G-Rex?
I hear that.
You could benefit.
Yeah.
Here the problem is I'm way more allergic to dogs than I am to cats. Okay.
Really?
Yeah. We have 8 cats in the house and I have to take a Zyrtec every day. And there's 2 rooms in the house that they can't come in. They can't come in my office, can't come into my room. But in the rest of the house, like if I don't take a Zyrtec, I can't breathe. But I love dogs. And so I grew up with dogs my entire life, right? Ever since I was like a little kid until I left the house when I was like 18. I love dogs. Like we had a golden doodle and we had a couple of black labs, and like I would take a dog in a heartbeat, but I'm old and I'm tired of dealing with my allergies.
Yeah.
They can take a doll, right? I mean, I don't have allergies to animals, so I don't know much about it, but any kind of situation like that, it can have a negative impact on your life, right? But therapy dogs are not the only kinds of therapy animals. There are actually therapy dogs. There's a better way of saying it, up to date with the terminology that's new out there. So animal assisted intervention. That is what I'm doing. It used to be like therapy dogs or dog therapy, but now you're supposed to call it therapy-assisted interventions. And there are organizations that certify other animals as well. So you can have cats, you can have bunny rabbits, llamas, miniature horses, guinea pigs, I think too. Yeah.
Can you please tell me that spiders and snakes don't fall into that category?
I have no idea, actually. For some people, and I don't like any kind of exclusion. However, there are some features of a therapy animal that have to be met. But I could guarantee that for people who have these types of animals in their houses, they are probably very therapeutic, right? There is a reason why they have them. To have a snake, for me, it wouldn't be maybe therapeutic. Well, when I observe nature, if I went to the zoo and saw the snake in like its almost natural surroundings, it was probably really cool to watch nature in action. Maybe it would be therapeutic. But for the therapy animals, they have to have, therapy animal have to be able to respond to a handler's professional's commands. So you can imagine that certain animals, spiders, probably would not be able to do this. Therefore, they wouldn't qualify to be a therapy animal.
Sorry, spiders.
That's awesome.
Well, I was just thinking, you know, like there's so many different animals. Like we have a friend of ours who is very attached to his cat, right? He's on the spectrum, has ADHD. And he wanted to take his cat with him to college as his therapy cat. But after we like talked about all the logistics and everything, and you know, the fact that he would be in school all day and you know, wouldn't have the interaction. I mean, we kind of talked about it. I think in the back of his head though, it's still a plan, which I'm fine with. But you know, we both all joked about it, but the cat does calm him down. So
yeah. The only problem is that to be able to take a cat like that to college or a dog, I mean, potentially this animal can live with this person and be a so-called, I forgot the name for this, it's not a service animal. It's like an emotional support. So that animal, that would have to be, of course, documented from like a psychologist or another professional in order to qualify to have a therapy emotional support animal living with you. But still would not be able to take this animal to college. In order to take it to college, the animal would have to have the status of a service animal. And that's a different animal than therapy animal or emotional support animal.
Wow.
Yeah. Because service animal is an animal that can go to persons with the person pretty much everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But they need to perform a certain task for that person, right? So it cannot be, it's just, I just feel good in the presence of my animal. That is not a task that the animal does for you to be able to be called a service dog.
How did you get into this? Like, how did this start for you?
It started really, we never had a plan to become a therapy dog team or anything like that. It really started, I think the start happened when my daughter was around 10 years old and we never had a dog as a family. And she wanted to have an animal and we knew that it would be a dog because I had a dog in the past, my husband had a dog in the past. So it would be a dog. But we decided it's time. She's already old enough to be able to have a dog. Just I had some more time on my hands a little bit too. I think that we have some time and a child grew up. I think now we can try to find a dog. And we didn't know what type of dog. So it's like, okay, like me and my daughter, we want a white poodle. We just like white poodles. That's it. My husband, I want a poodle. Oh. So it's like, how do you compromise? Maybe let's get a dog that looks a little bit like a poodle, but it's not exactly a poodle and it's not white. Okay, let's do it. So we started to investigate and we found out about those labradoodles. And then, wait a minute, there's also golden doodles. What's that? So we started reading about these mixtures of breeds. And eventually we found a breeder online and she had some available golden doodles. One of them was Carmel. We just saw her in the picture and right away, oh my gosh, we must have this dog. Is this dog still available? And that was in Rochester, New York. And we went and got Carmel. She became a part of our family and she was growing. She was about 6 months old and she became very strong. I never had an experience with her. I mean, she is 68 pounds. I never had a dog of this size. They can get so strong when they are like 6 months old, 7 months old, because they're growing, they're already big. And they have to take your dog for a walk, obviously, right? But it was like, it became impossible to do it. She was so strong. Just to use a collar, she was just so pulled. She would be just pulling so hard. I was afraid I would just like damage her neck or something. It was just horrible. Because I mean, she's essentially a hunting dog, right? It's she's a poodle and it's golden retriever. Maybe not all of them are like that, but she really was, and she still is right now. And then you do, you can take your own dog for a walk.
Right.
I started looking around for trainers in the area to turn to a trainer and just ask, what do I do? I had no idea what to do. And it was very hard to find anybody, but I finally got a hold of someone in the area and I found out she has some experience, and I called her and she says, you know what? I see you really have a really hard time with this dog. I would be willing to come and show you a couple of things, maybe like once or twice, and something that will really help you. So that's what happened. She came over and she started us on a type of harness, I guess that's called. It's called gentle leader. It like on Carmel's mouth around, and you would also would go behind the head. I mean, she knew how to do this. She had experience with this type of harness. And what happened was just amazing. Once we started using it, the first time, Carmel started walking by my leg on the side instantly. There was no more pulling. I was like, I can't believe this is happening. Then she came the second time. And then she says, you know what? It would be good for you to do more obedience training. So she was giving those types of trainings. We signed up for the classes. Then during the class, I remember when she says, you know what? This dog is amazing. I mean, she needs some more training, but she would be an amazing therapy dog. And then we went to for Canine Good Citizen, which is like the next step of training before you become therapy dog. And then just before we knew, another type of training happened, therapy dog training, and with the certification. And that's really how it happened. 2018, we became certified. So that's how it happened. It literally happened just like I described in one of my books that I published, From Unruly to Therapy Dog. That's what really happened. She was totally unruly. Didn't listen. I bought some books about training the dog, but it's a totally different game. I mean, with the experienced trainer, it's just different.
Yeah.
As opposed to reading a book about dog training, you might get a couple tricks, couple commands that might work, but it's just not the same. And so that training, good training, is so incredibly important for any dog owner. I think any kind of breed. I don't think there are too many dogs that are just like perfect.
right. Cool. Yeah. So it sounded like with training, you started to maybe see Carmel in a different light. How did you incorporate her with kids and learning?
So at the beginning, we just started incorporating her without any kind of like experimentation so much. But it was really through the conversation with the teacher. So I got connected to the teacher, I would have a conversation. Well, how do you think we could do this, right? What do you need in the classroom? Is it with a group of children you would like to do it? No, I would like Carmel to come and interact with my whole classroom, but I don't want the teaching to be stopped, maybe for a little bit at the beginning, right? When the dog is introduced to the group of kids. But then can we make it a part of classroom period when we still do the teaching and learning, but she somehow is a part? So it's like, how do you do it? Well, okay, I can come in, and that's what I would do. I would come in with her and I would just go around the classroom with her, and we would stop at the desks. And then when we stop, the child gets a chance to pet Carmel, talk to her, whatever. But everybody's still learning, raising their hands. And that's really how it started. And we're doing it to this day in some of the classes. But then in like more like a special education group of kids, there was a little bit different situation there. We would like interact without teaching. The teacher was able to take like a 10 or 15 minutes out of teaching, and they would interact with Carmel. And then we would split the kids. And let's say two of them would get a chance to take Carmel with me for a walk in the school, in just around the school, in the hallways. They really loved it. So I would take like, I would bring another extra leash. I would hold one leash, they would hold another, and this would be called, I am walking Carmel, right? I am in walking Carmel in the school. And they loved it because they would talk to other people in the hallways. They would like introduce me, and I got a chance to walk Carmel. It was just really awesome for them. It gave them a chance of like taking some responsibility, right? Helping walking the dog. So that was awesome. But then like around 3 years ago, I started collaborating with this one incredible teacher, Lucinda. And then we even had remote therapy during COVID, which was very difficult technologically because kids were at homes.
Yeah.
Lucinda was in school. So, and I was in my home. So we trying, I don't even know to this day how exactly she did it. Made this connection happen. It was totally different. It was a different game. I mean, there's no doubt about it. But those kids loved it. It was the highlight of a week for them. Carmel comes, they're going to see Carmel on the video. Awesome. I would talk a little bit about different things. It was just a little bit different type of interaction. Parents would see Carmel too on the screens, of course, as well. They loved it. And then I remember after the pandemic was over, kids were back to school. Lucinda started seeing just like really low levels of writing, of anything really in children, right? We all know what happened. And we started thinking, maybe we can do something more with Carmel. Like we can experiment with some activities. And we just started in a very simple way. We asked children like, how is Carmel kind? How does she show kindness? What does she do? And the kids are just, everybody wanted to talk about how Carmel shows kindness. They all wanted to describe. And then we asked them, awesome, well, can you use what you've learned from Carmel about being kind and do something for your family or for your friends at school, knowing that dogs do certain things in a different way because they are dogs, right? And people are
right.
So we had conversations about these differences too. But it was amazing what they said about what they think they've learned and how they can apply it to their family lives, school lives. And also my collaborator teacher, Lucinda, noticed that usually some children would raise their hands and tell the answers, and others would just like not say anything or just, well, I've got the same answer, right? Mm-hmm. But in this situation, because they were so already attached to the dog, they love Carmel, they all wanted to participate because it was about their dog. All had something to say, every child. So that was amazing too. And then we started doing something different, more like literacy activities. Kids were learning about visualization in language arts. And I started reading my book about how we became therapy dog team. So again, they were listening to me reading. This is about Carmel, the dog we know, the dog who comes to our classroom. And then like, wow, Cinda, our teacher is already in this book, is also in this book. They like, wow, this is really cool. I'm like, and they were asking me, well, you published this book? Yeah, I published this book. I'm like, yeah, anybody can publish the book. And they're like, wow. You know, I am an educator, right? This is my profession. But in this classroom, I was just a therapy dog handler, Carmel's friend who brought Carmel. I was not a teacher for them. So they were learning from me as learning from Carmel's friend, learning from Carmel and Carmel's mom who brings Carmel to the classroom. That's how it was. It was a totally different connection with me, not as the teacher at all. So that's another interesting thing that kids like to learn from others who are not teachers. Not authorities in teaching.
It's so true.
Right? That's really what happens. And we have to take advantage of this, really. And I remember when I told them, well, okay, now I'm going to read a scene from the book. And you're going to close your eyes. And you're going to imagine this whole scene that I'm reading about. And they close their eyes. I remember how they all closed their eyes. They were so serious about it. When I look around the classroom, all the eyes were closed. There's no question about it. And then I'm reading. And then when I was done with reading, I asked them, well, what did you see? What did you imagine? Again, everybody wants to say what they imagine. And it was very interesting. They imagined everything that I had in that scene written, the description, and they added more details. Like they almost like developed the scene into something more. And I was telling them, you are incredible. You could be incredible writers because you could help any writer. If you can help me in making the scene in my book better, I wish I had you when I was reading the book because you would have helped me when writing this book. And I seriously, I was just so amazed. And then I kept reading the book, and that's how the idea of them wanting to write books as well happened. They just started to ask me, do you think we could write books too? Of course you can write books too. We can help you with that. And that's how this project started. But I have to say one thing. When I came back to the classroom, I remember this visualization activity, and something was going on in the classroom, and Lucinda says, well, can we just do regular therapy? Everybody pets Carmel, and that's it. No literacy. And that's what we did. But after a while, kids were like, wait a minute, we want to do visualization with Carmel. Like they really wanted to do literacy activities with the dog, with Carmel. And we had no idea that they would really love it that much.
Yeah. Yeah, it reminds me of when I first took my son, very first time to go to the dentist.
Yeah.
I am one of those people that like, I'm deathly afraid to go to the dentist. Like it's going to take everything in me to convince myself go.
Yeah.
But I'm very, like, I don't want my fears to impact him.
Yeah.
So I had done some research and was looking around in the area that we lived in at the time to find a dentist. And I stumbled upon one that had a therapy dog.
Yeah.
And it was specific for kids. So you could book certain days that she would be there. Mm-hmm. And it was a golden doodle as well. And that was literally what we did. And the dog just was, she would stay by his side and he could pet her throughout his whole thing. And I don't know, it was just cool to see him engaged in something other than, you know, the boring stuff that was happening. So I think that's,
That's amazing. So you can see with the dogs, other therapy animals, they can places. It's just there's something, and that's why this has such an incredible impact on kids who have just trouble with focusing to begin with, right? And all kinds of disabilities. And then when the dog comes in, they just want to behave so well because they don't want the dog to see them as behaving not well. They want to be inviting for the dog to come back.
Right.
And to the point where some kids who have like behavioral plans, like they really have a lot of issues. And without like implementing those behavioral plans, like you cannot teach them, you cannot teach the group. But when I come with my dog, these kids don't need those behavioral plans. They immediately focus on the dog. And especially if you then incorporate the dog in a very like creative way, these children all of a sudden become creative. They don't cause any behavioral issues and everything is changing like magic. And it's unbelievable because I remember when I came to the small remedial mouth group with kids who just have really big issues with mouth. They hate mouth. They don't like going to this remedial mouth group, right? Obviously. But it just totally changed their attitude to mouth. Just the presence of the dog and doing something cool that involves play, some movement, and mouth. And then this mouth becomes something not that actually difficult to do.
Yeah.
How
I believe
possible?
It. Yeah. It's like the puppy days we used to have at work. Do you remember those, Jira?
Yeah, I remember those. I mean, it helps with the anxiety, right? I know that, like, being around animals, just it helps with the anxiety. And I can see how that would help the kids, right? Because, you know, little kids, they are full of energy. Like, I would like to bottle up their energy and sell it to anybody over the age of 50. But I can see, like when we're at the zoo or when we're, like, someplace out in a park, and you just see all these little kids just, like, congregate around the dogs. Yes, and it has such a calming effect on them. I can see how that would be so awesome to have in a school environment, because they have a really hard time articulating what they're feeling. And by having a dog or a cat or a lizard or a frog or whatever, something that they can touch and feel, and that is not the same as them, but has a very calming effect about them. And I think what you're doing is so amazing.
Yeah, it's like thinking about it. If I go back to school and, like, the most boring subjects ever, if I had something positive to associate it to, it would have retained all that information. You know what I mean?
You can imagine how many children are struggling with math, but then there's also the aspect of anxiety. And we're trying to figure out, like, and I have these questions too, like, why do you think this is working like that? Why does it have such an effect? And I think that, well, here is Carmel. So,
doing her job.
The schools are kind of not always inviting spaces for children. I mean, you have teachers, you have psychologists, but these are strangers, to be honest, right? These are not, like, friends for children. I mean, there are a lot of teachers who are amazing teachers, and they are true friends. They want nothing but the best for children, but they still struggle. They struggle with children's anxiety. They don't know what to do. I mean, what are you going to do when the kid's anxiety prevents them from learning? What are you going to do? Send them to psychologists? Well, that's another adult they will have to deal with, and it's not going to provide any calming effect in any way, unfortunately. I mean, they are specialists and they help, but it's not going to change the situation for the child to the point where they can actually learn. The only thing that can make a big difference is to introduce someone, an animal, that doesn't judge. And it's amazing how you just can't fool kids, right? You just can't fool kids. If they don't have the friend next to them, real friend, they're going to still feel anxiety. There's nothing friendly, nothing that can feel like, you know, I have to tell you, I remember one point when I brought Carmel to, I think it was third grade. That was the grade in which we did the book and the visualization. And the book is based on this teachers and therapy dog teams. And I remember this girl, my dog was sitting, and this girl just, like, almost like laid down on the floor because she wanted to touch Carmel's white paw with her cheek and, like, feel it. I was like, what does that mean? Or a child who put his cheek on Carmel's fur just to, like, feel it. Like, this is something different. And it's this craving for something that's warm, fuzzy, has no judgment. And how about this? At one point, I remember, and I had no idea about this at that time, because, you know, as a therapy dog handler, I come into the classroom and I cannot know a lot about these children because there's confidentiality, right?
Right.
I mean, I can know that maybe some have issues, but that's really all. But this one child did not speak.
Oh, wow. Nonverbal.
Yeah, totally nonverbal, not speaking. And Carmel, one time Carmel came in and teacher told me about it. I wasn't aware of this. And Carmel, like, touched him with her nose or something, and he thought it was really funny. And that's the Carmel, you came to see me. This is so cool. I love you so much, Carmel. And that was the time when the teacher heard this child speak for the first time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So you can imagine how many schools, in every school, there's probably at least a couple, if not more, kids like that who do speak.
Right. Wow. That's wonderful. I love Carmel. I mean, I love pet therapy. I love the whole thing behind it. I could see benefit from it for sure.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's amazing. I think what you do is amazing.
Thank you. And there is a lot of other teams who do the same thing. And I mean, this is all voluntary work, right? We don't get compensated for this work. Many of us work full time. But the question is, like, why do these therapy teams do this? Well, because they see these
things the benefit
day, and when you see something good instantly, it makes you feel good too. So there is like a cycle of goodness.
I know.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
I could see where it would be even beneficial to like big corporations to, you know, have like a therapy dog day. You know, we all get so wrapped up in like what we do on our day to day stuff that, you know, it's hard to pull away. But seeing it from my kids' eyes, like how freaking cool is that? Right. Like you go to school and you get to see a dog and then you get to like tell a story about the dog. And I just think it's the coolest thing. And are there more schools doing this now, or is this relatively new?
So, well, I have to say that this is not something that's only what we're doing here in the United States, but obviously the United States is kind of a leader in this area, I think, I don't know if I can say it, because just there's more therapy dogs here and more therapy dog organizations and all that. But there are many schools that never saw a therapy dog in the United States. So this is not something that happens in every school in this country. It just doesn't. And for whatever reason, people in the school, just administration, teachers, maybe they don't know the benefits. They don't have the access to therapy dogs. They didn't know how to start it.
Right.
The whole field of therapy dogs, as far as like professional development organizations that would help in getting answers, is only starting. Really, there is an organization that provides courses, mini conferences. There is a mini conference in which I'm going to participate February 29th. And that's going to be specifically for people, administrators, schools who would like to start this practice, but they don't know how, they don't know what to do. So that is, and I belong to some therapy dog groups on Facebook, and I see occasionally a post principal, let's say, saying, I just don't know what to do anymore. Kids, there's so much anxiety, there's so much trouble. So I'm here in this group, and you guys, can you help me? Tell me how we can start this. What can we do to bring therapy animals to the school? Because it's just like, I can't deal with this anymore. We have to do something different, right? Literally.
Yeah.
So I think this field is developing more, and there's more and more awareness, and also in the world. I know there's therapy dogs in India. There are therapy dogs in, I know someone who does, she has her own therapy dog in very small country of Malta, which is right under Sicily in Europe. I mean, it happens everywhere, almost. I'm sure there are countries that didn't probably even hear about this at all. But it's United States definitely is taking the lead in this area. But we don't want this to be this way. We want this to really be more and more common in the world.
Yeah, for sure. Like I can see this really like benefiting kids like in inner city schools or, you know, or in the like underprivileged schools. You know, I see a lot of anxiety from that. And I think what you're doing is so incredible. It really is. I wish I'd had therapy dogs when I was going to school.
Yeah, I wish too. Same.
Yeah,
way. We can't turn the clock, right? We cannot change the past, but we can definitely, that's why I'm doing what I'm doing, because just seeing, and I mean, there are some incredible stories, such as the child starting to talk, right? But even every time I come in, when you see the smiles on children's faces, when I enter with Carmel, all of a sudden, everybody looks different. I'm not saying that school or that's the lesson that was occurring brought them down, but it's a totally different face expression. And even on the teacher's faces too, it's sort of different feelings when you enter with the dog. It just changes everything. There is a lot of positive chemicals and hormones that everybody.
Yeah, the energy.
and energy changes. And the kids, maybe some think that the dog like that would bring maybe destruction to what you're teaching. If the teacher is not willing to try something new, that will prevent them from trying this. Obviously, they'll just do whatever they're doing, right? They'll think, well, I'm not going to do anything like that. I'm not going to be able to cover what I have to cover with teaching. I don't want the dog in the classroom. It's going to be a distraction, but it's not.
They have to be willing to try.
Yeah, you have to be willing to try. There's no doubt about it. And the teacher with whom I work, she is like that. It's like, I will try. Let's try something new. You have to do this. Yeah.
I love that. Well, thank you for sharing your story.
Of course.
I'm excited to actually dig in online and see what I can do for my son's school, because I feel like he would benefit crazy good from this. So yeah, I'm going to look into it. And I just appreciate your story and what you do.
I'm glad you sharing that, because I would imagine, I think if I had any kind of advice of like how to start with the school, definitely equip yourself with some knowledge in this area, right? What kind of benefits are available, and also that there are ways of making this work, because there are some parents, teachers, or children who cannot literally interact with the dog for a variety of reasons, and mostly probably allergies. There is ways of minimizing those issues to make sure that everybody is included, and therapy dog is not something that you force people into.
Right.
It should be all kinds of considerations to be in place. But there is organization that I can always share with you that has materials and resources for people like that, administrators who would like to start this, but just don't know how.
Yeah. And one last time, can you tell us the name of your book?
So my latest book, in which I describe more like innovative characteristics of this practice, that's Teachers and Therapy Dogs, Innovative Collaborations to Make a Difference for Children. It is available on Amazon. That's the one who has a description of how we started this innovation, the whole history of this. And then I also include lesson plans for lessons, for writing lessons that include therapy dogs, and also math lessons too.
That is so cool.
I'm thinking, even if I couldn't get the school right to do it, we have two dogs upstairs. And there's going to be a time where I got to do homework with him. I know he's 6 now, but I'm like, I can do this. Yeah.
Yep.
At least try something new.
Yeah, because like, I mean, even at home, you can like use your dog's cable, depending on what you feed your dog, and use it for like math manipulatives or things like that, right? So anything that you can like connect to what your child likes, and if they connect it to something really well and deeply, boy, it changes the way they learn.
Oh my God.
That's what we see with math. I mean, I remember one time after the math activity, I'm telling Lucinda, wait a minute, these kids are so good. Are they really weak in math? I'm like, yeah, so good, because you are here with Carmel.
Take Carmel away and they're like, math sucks. Bring Carmel back. Math is great.
They know that next week Carmel will be here. So they have anticipation, and the teacher can make, here's another thing. I mean, I don't go there every day. I go like once a week, but the teacher was able to make those connections. And during her teaching without us there, she would make connections to Carmel. It's like,
that's good.
When she said, the kids are telling me we have to be really patient because Carmel is very patient and we need to learn from her. So she would make references and connection to Carmel even when we were not there, and they would still learn.
That is so cool. So, Dr. Barb, I have a couple of questions for you. For our listeners, and to just put in our show notes, are there organizations that listeners can look into, maybe for their own good, or something that they could present to their local school district?
Yes. So there is an organization that I just mentioned. This organization provides professional development, can point school districts to ways of starting this practice. It's called Association of Animal Assisted Intervention Professionals. That's the name of it. AAAIP. So they offer courses, they offer many online conferences. So this is a really cool organization to start with. There are also, and there are many of them, therapy dogs, organizations that certify therapy dogs. I belong to Therapy Dogs International, but there are also other ones. Pet Partners is another big therapy dogs organization, and they certify other animals, not only therapy dogs. There is Alliance of Therapy Dogs too. So I just mentioned three big therapy dog organizations, but the first one, Association of Animal Assisted Intervention Professionals, they can certify animals to become therapy dogs, but they do so much more. Like I said, they offer courses, all kinds of information, mini conferences. That's really a good place to start, I think.
Okay.
Well,
thank you.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Yeah. And this one, Association of Animal Assisted Intervention Professionals, they have a mini conference on February 29th. And if someone would like to find out how to start therapy, animal assisted intervention in their school district, and if they're not a member of this organization, it's $29, I think, to just register and participate. So I don't think the fee is very big. Or the kind of information that someone can learn really through participation. And it's online. So that's just so convenient because you don't have to go in.
Right. Amazing. Yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much again, Barb. I appreciate your time, sharing your story, giving us something to think about for what's new.
Yes.
And other things we can try.
So thank you so much, because having me here and being able to chat with you, that also helps me in spreading this awareness further. That is my mission, and even I make it a part of my job as a college professor. They've known me for this now more than I present about it at the university too. So yeah, why not?
I know.
Yeah, I think that, to be honest with you, it probably, this mission kind of helped me in on this job. This job can be complex because it's teaching, it's service, and it's research. Just kind of infusing my job with this mission, with this passion, kind of helped me in making my job something that I can like again. Literally.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I love that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hi, all. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I'm G-Rex.
And I'm Dirty Skittles.
Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. We'd love to listen to your feedback.
We can't do this without you guys. It's okay to be not okay. Just make sure you're talking to someone.